Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Super Tuesday forces out four Democratic candidates for president. Democrats in Michigan and other large states will pick Joe or Bernie before Wisconsin does. When Wisconsin Democrats vote April 7th, will it matter?
Wisconsin has had one confirmed case.
State officials brief legislators on the coronavirus. Crossing their fingers, they say for now, the risk is low in Wisconsin and labs in Madison and Milwaukee can now test for the virus. Governor Evers and Attorney General Call join the lawsuit trying to block the Trump administration from taking money from National Guards to build the border wall. State officials fear the diversion means the Pentagon will buy fewer Oshkosh-built vehicles. That and WisPolitics Stock Report in the March 6th edition of Rewind, your week in review. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
What a week, J.R., in politics. We had Super Tuesday. As a result, you have four candidates leaving, gotten out. Steyer, Bloomberg, Klobuchar, Buttigieg.
Warren got out right after started running her first ads in Wisconsin.
I know. And even after Bloomberg got out, we're still seeing the ads for him. Okay, where I want to go with this is to get you on will Wisconsin matter on April 7th. But if you'll permit me, help me lay the groundwork this way. I went ahead and looked at the future calendar, and here was my criteria. We are going to have 97 delegates to the DNC convention in Milwaukee, 84 pledged and 13 superdelegates. So I looked at which states with more delegates are going to vote here in the next 3 weeks. Okay, next Tuesday, Washington and Michigan, March 17th, Illinois, Ohio, and Florida, March 24th on Georgia. Then let's look at, I'm laying the groundwork for you, man. I'm teeing you up. Bernie Sanders won the presidential primary in Wisconsin in 2016.
71 of 72 counties.
Thank you. But then let's look at the recent Charles Franklin poll, which had Bernie up 29 to 15 over Biden. But now the footnote on that poll showed Bloomberg at 17, Buttigieg at 13, and Bloomberg and Buttigieg have endorsed Biden. I'm almost done. Now, I did an interview last week with State Senator Janet Buley, who's a member of the DNC. And I asked her, will Wisconsin matter? And she said, I think Wisconsin will matter. Wisconsin is in the spotlight a lot because we're hosting the convention and because Trump won here by less than 23,000 votes. But now I'm turning it over to you because you interviewed Joe Zepecki, who you and I have worked with in the past. I have on the Mary Burke campaign for governor. We're going to see a real dogfight here, and I think that's good for the party. All that sets you up for the question, will we matter on April 7th?
I don't know, but let me get to this first. So remember a week ago we sat here and I told you I'd been hearing from people who were saying that why would anybody drop out of this race? We're going to a contested convention, broker convention, so stay in, amass your delegates, and have a fight out in the convention.
The day before he dropped out, Bloomberg said, I'm in it to win it. I'm sorry, this is your... Go.
No, go right ahead. So now I want to bring up Jim Clyburn. I've been told in my career in journalism and covering politics that endorsements only matter if they involve money or infrastructure. This may be the one exception to that rule with Mr. Clyburn, a prominent African-American congressman from South Carolina, because this, Biden was expected to do well in South Carolina, probably going to win.
60% of the votes were African-Americans.
But because he won by the margin he did,
yes,
which is attributed by many people to Clyburn's endorsement in the days before the primary, it created the Joe momentum. All of a sudden, because he did so well, Buttigieg and Klobuchar dropped out on Monday. He won Virginia on Tuesday with one office. I think maybe one or two staffers in all of Virginia. He won Virginia. It's because of the perception, momentum. So, and I bring this stuff up to say, I don't know because momentum shifts so much in these campaigns. And I don't like in our business where I feel like the national and political media jumps on the latest thing to say, this is going to happen for sure now. In October, Elizabeth Warren was the almost like on a march to the nomination. She was going to be unstoppable. A week and a half ago, Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee. Joe Biden was dead in the water. Now it's, Biden's got the path. He's going to wrap this thing up in a couple weeks. Now, you can see where Biden could do that. Look to next week. If Biden wins Michigan, let's focus on Michigan,
yep.
Okay, next week.
Yeah, yeah.
Bernie Sanders pulled off a major upset in Michigan in 2016. He was down in polling by double digits, won the state. That really infused new life into his campaign and created this kind of air of, okay, Clinton maybe is not inevitable. Maybe there's a chance for Bernie. Now, not likely, but maybe. So let's say next Tuesday, Bernie Sanders wins Michigan. That might halt some of this Joe momentum. Maybe create the perception of, hey, maybe Sanders has got a chance. Because if he can pair Michigan with Washington State, whoa, what's going on all of a sudden?
But we're two political junkies here because the governor of Michigan just endorsed Biden going into this.
Now I'll go a week ahead. We got Florida.
Yeah.
Well, Joe Biden's up by like 20-some
points. Illinois, Ohio, and Florida, March 17th.
20-some points in a poll in Florida. So if he wins Florida by that much, what's that mean? Ohio looks like a Biden state. Illinois looks like a Biden state. If Biden can win Michigan, can win Washington State, does well March 17th, does that then take the wind out of the Sanders sails? And it's all but a done deal for Biden. That's why I say don't know what's going to happen in Wisconsin April 7th. What I do get the impression, I talked to you this week, was there's going to be a fight here. The question is, how intense will it be, and will it matter in picking the nominee? People I talked this week feel like Sanders, he's not somebody going to drop out. He's going to take this right to the convention.
He isn't.
Wisconsin being a place where he did well 4 years ago, you can see where he's going, I'm going to go into Wisconsin guns ablaze and trying to get some momentum back. However, that Franklin poll, the Marquette poll, and the one before it from UW now, he's at about 30% in that poll.
Right, and if you add the 17% from Bloomberg in the Charles Franklin poll and the 13% from Buttigieg to his 15%, then he's at 45, Bernie's at 30. But that's too simplistic, as you and I know.
And you brought up a great thing. I actually asked Franklin, okay, with your poll, they asked first and second choice, okay? Where are these? What's the second choice of the Klobuchar, Buttigieg, Warren, Bloomberg voters? The answer is some trends, but not a definitive answer. So let's now. It's also not a perfect exercise because, for example, if you're a Klobuchar backer, your second choice might have been Warren. Well, you can't vote for her now. I mean, you could still cast a ballot. It's not going to matter for her, though.
Right, but she's not viable. She wasn't viable in any of those Super Tuesday states. Came in third in her own state, Massachusetts. Excuse me.
So Warren. If you look at Warren supporters, the second choice, about a third of Warren backers over 5 months of polling from Marquette, their second choice, about a third of them was Sanders. Okay, that makes sense. But only a third. You had Klobuchar. You had Biden voters in there. So you can't just say the Warren lane goes to Sanders.
Charles Franklin had Warren at 9%. Excuse me.
Now, go to the Buttigieg, the Bloomberg. Bloomberg, their most popular second pick was Biden, but not everybody. Here's another crazy thing. The Sanders voters, their second pick most likely was Warren, but about 1 in 5 said Joe Biden. Now, is that because Biden...
Wow.
Is that a sign of if Biden looks viable, like he's got momentum back, might he siphon off people from Sanders? Maybe. Much like Sanders voters, Biden voters... About a one-fifth of their second pick was Sanders.
That's why I get where Janet Buley is coming from, a member of the DNC. Mm-hmm. Look, there's been so much emphasis on Wisconsin. The delegates are coming here July 13 through 16. Of course we're going to matter. We're also the only state that holds its Democratic primary on April 7th.
So the question again is, will the state still matter in terms of the big picture of the nominee? If Biden gets hot for another 3 weeks, it could be over. Okay. This could be the last gasp for Bernie Sanders. Now, let's remember the Supreme Court race. Turnout's going to be a big impact on that race. There are two scenarios that I could see, the polar opposites. On one, Biden or Sanders wraps this thing up. The next 3 weeks, that guy catches fire. This thing is over. That peters out before April 7th. Okay? That's better for Justice Kelly. Helps him a great deal. The nightmare scenario for Kelly, however, is Wisconsin becomes the progressive voters turning out for Bernie Sanders, the moderate Democratic voters turning out for Joe Biden, and then go to Milwaukee, where you have two black candidates on the ballot for mayor and county executive.
Yes, Lena Taylor and David Crowley.
We've seen every spring, African-American turnout in Milwaukee is not as high as it is in a November election. It's just the way it's been for years for a multitude of reasons. If you have supercharged black turnout in Milwaukee, if you have a super jazz moderate wing of the Democratic Party and a super jazzed liberal wing of the Democratic Party, that is not a good scenario for Justice Kelly. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
I understand.
But I'm giving you the two polar opposite possibilities of April 7th, what it could look like.
Okay. And I appreciate you saying you don't know, because there's all these elements. And you know what? There's some pretty exciting elements in mm-hmm. terms of Wisconsin mattering
and
on
again,
April 7th.
Why matters. I never make predictions. A week ago, people were telling me, why would you even drop out, JR? Stay until the end. And then, bam, four go out in the span of a week. It's the craziest swing that I've seen in my lifetime covering politics in terms of a presidential race.
And it keeps us junkies going. Yeah. Okay, new topic. We have wanted to know for years, I'm sorry, a long time, that the Trump administration is going to divert resources and cash from the Pentagon, from the Department of Defense budget to build the wall. Well, this week, Governor Evers authorized Attorney General Call to join the lawsuits, I think, with 14 others, mm-hmm. AGs, to stop the Pentagon from diverting cash to build the southern border wall. The Trump administration plans to take money from National Guard, federal cash earmarked for the National Guard to do building maintenance and other improvements to the Guard. The lawsuit says diverting would cancel Pentagon plans to buy Oshkosh Defense tactical vehicles, delay maintenance and repairs at Guard bases. Finally, JR, before I give you a chance to talk, diversion, the governor said, is a wasteful use of taxpayer dollars and would hurt the needs of our state National Guard. There is simply no justification for the president's continued desire to create a crisis at the border. JR, this is one in a string of authorizations by the governor for the attorney general to sue. What's another one?
The first big one is he authorized Call to withdraw from the suit challenging the Affordable Care Act, which was an action that Scott Walker and Brad Schimmel took. Back in, I don't remember what year it was now,
yeah.
But they reversed that when they had the opportunity. So with this entire discussion, to me, Oshkosh Truck is the symbol of this.
That's the reason we're mentioning it on this show.
And like the guard buildings, like the average person is not going to see a guard building not be rehabilitated.
Right.
But if you have a contract with Oshkosh Truck canceled, if there are layoffs at Oshkosh Truck, which is a major employer in the Fox Valley, which is a major place in the state for Republicans to go get votes, then you start to have a real-world impact to voters of, oh, wait a second, there's a cost by doing this with the wall. Now, I'm not predicting that. I'm not hoping for it. I'm just saying if you see these things. Now, right now I have a pretty good economy. There are a lot of jobs out there. So if you are laid off by Oshkosh Truck, you can probably pick up a job somewhere else. I can't guarantee you'll be as good benefits, good as pay those things. But I'm pointing this company out as this could be the symbol in Wisconsin of the impact of Trump diverting that money and really how it affects our lives.
And I'm also intrigued because yesterday the governor the Supreme Court Justice swore in, but the governor pinned the new Brigadier mm-hmm. General of our Guard. I wonder, I hope you and I get a chance to ask him, what would be the effect of the cut in if the Pentagon cut National Guard funds?
No. So. You know, if they survive, if the contract goes away, there's no disruption in Oshkosh Truck, great, you know, it would minimize the impact. Yeah. But if there is that disruption, and it's not just Oshkosh Truck, but the supply chain around it, you could see a real impact in Wisconsin.
Okay, new topic. After we taped the show last week, the Court of Appeals overturned the Milwaukee area judge who said, Elections Commission, not only are you in contempt and start paying money, but you must purge the names of more than 200,000 voters. The Court of Appeals overturned the lower court order that Elections Commission must purge names of more than 200,000 voters. Now, the first time the Supreme Court was asked to take this case directly, 3-3 deadlock, because Mr. Kelly backed off the case, mm-hmm. Justice Kelly, and Brian Hagedorn signed with, let's not take it now. Now, he used to be on the Court of Appeals, so maybe, and we don't know his thinking, but maybe he wanted the Court of Appeals to finally decide and issue a ruling on this case.
That was the assumption I talked to people when this first came out. Now, the question becomes, how quickly can the state Supreme Court act, and would it issue an injunction of the appeals court ruling and leave the circuit court ruling in place? I mean, like all these what-ifs right now. But this was a complaint from conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley when the court deadlocked about taking this up was,
yep.
If we leave the appeals court to go first, there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court can issue a final ruling before November. Well, the appeals court, I would say, moved fairly quickly, had a decision out by the end of February. So now, Supreme Court, how quickly can it act? And then, again, what's it do? As we sit here Friday morning, the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty has not filed its appeal with the Supreme Court. And maybe it's going to do it soon. We expect it soon.
Right.
Once that's filed, what's the timeline to get something done? And then that could really have the final say before November on what's happening with these folks.
Now, right. The Court of Appeals ruling got some national headlines because you're talking about 200,000 voters potentially in a state that, as we said earlier, President Trump won by less than 23,000. Right. And the statement from, as you said, Mr. Rick Hessenberg, of the founder of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Wisconsin deserves clean elections in 2020. It is our intent to seek review in the Wisconsin Supreme Court to ensure that the Wisconsin Elections Commission complies with state law. So that's something we have to continue to watch. There was a briefing this week. We would be remiss, given the uncertainties, if we didn't mention that state health officials briefed lawmakers and others on the coronavirus and how it's growing nationally, although in a limited way in Wisconsin. First, let's listen to some of that, not testimony, but some of the briefing from two of our state health department officials.
The current situation in Wisconsin is that we've not yet detected additional COVID-19 cases. It's possible, and in fact likely, that we will detect additional cases in the coming days or weeks. The evidence suggests that COVID-19 cases will continue to increase in the U.S. and internationally, and we expect that the global situation will cross the threshold where it's likely to be considered a pandemic. Having said that, our assessment of the current situation about the immediate risk to Wisconsin residents is unchanged. At this moment, there's not evidence that the virus is circulating in Wisconsin communities and the risk to the population is low.
What is the chance of reinfection? Do people actually get an immunity after they have had a bout of this and are cleared?
Because it's new, there's so much we don't know. The science is changing and we are learning as we go, and that's why our guidance will change based on what's happening on the ground, based on what the new science and the developing science tells us. And it is why it is so important for us to be transparent and to when we know something, everybody else is going to know something, because that is how we together will work through this and do the best we can to protect the people of this state.
Just to indicate how seriously some state officials are considering the contingency plans, I was intrigued that you guys at WisPolitics reported. The Elections Commissioner Ann Jacobs says a contingency plan is needed for an Election Day November 3rd pandemic. That shows the specter of what could happen.
Don't forget, we have an international gathering coming to Milwaukee in July.
50,000 people.
Yeah. Now, it isn't just the delegates who are going to be coming together. It's the international media coming in to cover this event.
And international dignitaries.
Imagine what this could be like if this thing grows and there are issues going forward in July in Milwaukee. That is a nightmare scenario for the people running that convention right now.
So Election Commissioner Ann Jacobs is worrying about, she wants a strategy for Election Day, but as you point out, there's a whole lot of other potential coronavirus concerns before that, including. Okay, now let's look at two other statements by state health officials that we didn't hear from on the video. The risk to public remains low in Wisconsin, but it's especially important that we have the lab capacity in Milwaukee and Madison. And Tom Haupt, who's a epidemiologist, not everybody who requests testing will have testing approved. This is interesting because now, this morning, you and I get on our exercise machines a little early and we watch, you know, we're junkies. A CDC official says only 75,000 test kits available in the next few days because now they're partnering with a private company. And yes, within 7 or 10 days, we may have the million that was promised. It's just very interesting. Finally, let's look at some totals. The COVID-19 in the U.S., as of this morning, 233 confirmed cases, 14 deaths, all but one in the state of Washington, tragically. Yet, you and I have seen the headlines. Thousands of people are self-quarantined, and we're very glad we're not on that cruise ship off the coast of San Francisco.
I will never go on a cruise for several reasons. This is one of them.
I like cruises. But anyway, maybe not as much as I used to. Okay, and now let's look at the total for Wisconsin. COVID-19 in Wisconsin, 39 people tested, 24 negative tests so far, one positive, 14 tests pending. As
a
veteran,
the one positive person has recovered at this point.
Thank you for saying the one positive person has recovered. This is an illustration. You and I, as news veterans, these numbers, these warnings, these protocols change every news cycle or every 2 hours. This is a really hard issue.
I saw a map this morning, I think, of the places where we've had positives. Wisconsin has one.
One. Illinois,
then you,
five.
Then you have Omaha, like Nebraska has one. Like, is this island in the sea of...
Colorado, two. And then you have the East and West Coast. Yeah. Wow. Okay. The governor acted on more than 60, maybe 70 bills mm-hmm. over the last few days. So let's just highlight a few of those that he signed. And we don't have time, obviously, to list them all. So jump in here, anything you want to highlight. Suicide hotlines must be listed on student IDs. This is part of the recommendations of the Suicide mm-hmm. Task Force.
Yep.
So when your sons sign up for, when they get their next ID cards, those are going to be on there. Are you okay with that as a parent?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So mental health is something to be aware of. Yeah, sure.
Okay. New rules for physical restraints and seclusions in K-12 schools. This was a big deal. They went around a lot on this.
Yeah.
Swatting. Making a false report that someone is being kidnapped or there's a hostage situation to get out a SWAT team will now be a felony. I didn't know it wasn't. Did you know it wasn't?
No.
Okay. The new package of HOPE bills to fight opioid abuse. This is the third or fourth package that was signed into law.
If I remember correctly from the Nygren, John Nygren, co-chair of the Finance Committee, who's been the lead on almost all the HOPE agenda stuff, these are bills 31, 32, 33, and 34.
Yes.
For the last half dozen years to address the opioid epidemic in Wisconsin.
And they passed unanimously.
I think there have only been a couple handful of no votes on any of the bills of that entire 34, a couple of handful of no votes the whole
right.
time.
Right. Now, I'm so intrigued by the porch pirate bill, because if you're a porch pirate and if you take less than 10 U.S. mail items, it's a misdemeanor. But under a new law, if you take more than 10 porch pirate items, if you porch pirate more than 10, it's a felony. Ta-da! Our readers, viewers need to know that. The Department of Natural Resources, must launch a Lyme disease PR awareness campaign. And there was a bill that also toughened prison, more prison time mm-hmm. for, I think, fifth and sixth OWIs. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, let's also talk about the bills we referred to last week, the tougher on crimes bills that he did end up vetoing about a week ago. Number one, these are vetoed. Require the corrections department to start revocation of anyone accused of a crime out on probation. Or parole, or extended supervision, would have expanded the number of crimes in which juveniles could be considered serious offenders, would have required court approval anytime a prosecutor downgraded or dismissed a felon in possession of a weapon charge, would have prohibited felons convicted of violent crimes from being considered for release because of age, health, and time served. And the governor's comments, I will not move Wisconsin in the wrong direction on criminal justice reform and public safety. You want to talk about the yin and the yang here? Because these bills would have added prison inmates hundreds of millions. And did DOC once say it could force the construction of two new prisons?
Yeah. Now, the authors of the bills, they doubted the corrections estimate that they thought they were inflated to try and turn up opinion against the bills. Look, I think Republicans knew when they passed most of these bills that they were never going to get signed. So there was, I think, one.
So why push them?
Simple. The arithmetic people I talked to said was these are largely suburban Republican lawmakers who pushed the bills, trying to excite suburban voters about the Republican brand at a time when Donald Trump does not. So you use Milwaukee as the big bad Milwaukee that you're afraid of. There's all this crime coming out of Milwaukee. Therefore, you want these bills to toughen up to try and keep you safe from big bad Milwaukee. Hey, that's kind of the political calculation. Now, I'm not saying these ideas don't have merit, but the political calculation, that's kind of the feedback that I got from folks when I asked about these bills.
Well, it was no surprise then that the governor vetoed these four tough on crime bills. Huh. There's more, as we discussed last week, there's more tougher on crime bills pending in the state Senate, which is going to meet the...
March 24th-ish, I believe.
Yes. So... do you look for the Senate to continue to put tougher on crime bills on the governor's desk?
The Senate has been hesitant to spend any money outside the budget, at least general purpose revenue money. But they also know these bills aren't going to become law, so it's kind of like they're not really spending it when they pass them. So watch that. Also, you know, you've seen Robin Voss and Republicans in general knock Governor Evers for being soft on crime. That he doesn't want to address these issues in Wisconsin because there are issues with carjacking and car theft. He doesn't want to address these things, and so they're going to hit him with soft on crime.
Right. Okay. And we'll be reporting on the Senate actions, of course, when they come back on 24th?
24th, I think. Yep. Okay. Around there, yeah.
Stock picks.
So rising this week, we have Tammy Baldwin. Like, the Democratic field for president, when this began however months ago, it was when they boasted of this diversity they have. It's not really down to two old white guys vying for the Democratic nomination. And so I've always heard the argument that the pick for vice president isn't really that important. It's kind of more of a perception thing. But this time it might actually matter, and for a couple of reasons. One, their age. I mean, they are 77 and 78 years old. You want to have somebody in that number two slot who could step in and do the job, who has experience, who's also younger than they are. And two, you have a number of key voting blocks for Democrats who are unhappy that their choices are now these two older white gentlemen, when they had African-American women, they had female candidates, they had a gay candidate. I mean, you just go down the list of choices that they had, the diversity in the field, and it's all kind of evaporated. Granted, Tulsi Gabbard is still in, but she's not considered a viable candidate. And why I get to Baldwin is, in the chatter about a vice presidential pick, her name is mentioned by a lot of national media. Now, I'm not saying she's definitely going to be there at the very end in the discussion, but she has a number of things that make her part of a viable candidate for vice president. One, she is the first openly gay person elected to the state U.S. Senate. She is a prolific fundraiser. She won Wisconsin by 11 points. That's a big deal because Wisconsin is one of the three or four tipping points, possibly, in this presidential election. Having somebody like Baldwin could be good. Now, beyond that, I've heard the argument from her fans that if Biden's the nominee, Baldwin can be a bridge to the progressive wing of the party because she can talk about Medicare for All, which she supports. If Sanders is the nominee, she can also talk to the moderate wing of the party because she has expertise on manufacturing, on dairy. She can talk comfortably about those issues. Now, if you look at the other people who were mentioned, I mean, Stacey Abrams from Georgia, a former governor, gubernatorial candidate, you know, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, you know, Elizabeth Warren gets mentioned, all these people who ran before, there are all kinds of boxes that they check. There's no perfect candidate who checks every box that you might want, but Baldwin checks enough that she's probably going to get talked about until the very end of this process, at least be on the list when it comes crunch time to pick a vice presidential
nominee. Okay, your overtime on rising mixed.
Mixed, Ron Johnson. Once again, he has got his finger in the middle of all stuff going on in Washington, D.C. He wants to subpoena records from Burisma, this Ukraine company that's, you know, Hunter Biden worked with, that there are questions that Republicans have raised about his role. Basically, he's in the thick of it again. But just like with the other Ukraine stuff, I don't know the voters back home really kind of have an idea what he's involved in. Are there any blowback for him? Although Mitt Romney, who serves on the committee with Johnson, has said he thinks this looks political and people are tired of these political investigations. He's not going to vote for the subpoena, which he needs to support it for it to go through. But you have Johnson once again in the mix of all this stuff going on.
Okay, and falling.
So he mentioned the bills that Governor Evers signed. He vetoed a couple this week. One of them was for paddle wheels. So these are the ones, you know, the big wheel spins around and, you know, a raffle and you win a prize. Look, we've all been to fundraisers where you have a paddle wheel going on, but technically they're illegal. They passed a bill that would legalize these things, but Evers vetoed it for a couple of reasons. One, he interrupted expanding gaming, but two, he said, if you do this, you could threaten the gaming compacts Wisconsin has with our Native American tribes. That is key because those tribes have exclusivity in those compacts, which is why they pay the state money for running those casinos. And if you don't have that exclusivity, you don't have that revenue, and that blows a hole in the budget.
Those are good calls. I want to talk about programming next week. Wisconsin I's got a very busy week. On Monday, WisPolitics President Jeff Mayers and I will be interviewing former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. On Wednesday, I'll be moderating a Madison Rotary Forum with Supreme Court candidate Jill Karofsky. Justice Daniel Kelly was invited. He couldn't make it. On Thursday, I'll be moderating a Milwaukee Bar Association forum with both Justice Kelly and Judge Karofsky. I'll also be interviewing the two candidates for Milwaukee County Executive and Senator Lena Taylor running for mayor of Milwaukee. And we've invited Mayor Tom Barrett to sit down for a WISI campaign interview. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for March 6.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. the Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.